This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Sailing frequencies open, sir.
And liftoff. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. If you're listening to this right on schedule, you just watched episode three. Red alert. You just watched episode three of Discovery, and you finally saw the Discovery.
Yes.
The show is called Discovery for a reason. So that's really cool. So welcome again. My name's Jordan Hoffman. Brian is with me again, as always. Well, not as always. You weren't with
Sometimes.
Me for last time.
Yeah, I'm when you're in New York, I'm here.
When I'm here. Well, you're always in my heart, Brian.
Thank you.
But you weren't here last week when we did episode one and two. We had our special guest, Adam. And Brian, you just told me something about that.
Yes. You told me that I was going to be disgusted by what Adam ordered, and I don't agree. I think that sounds delicious.
The cheeseburger fries looked a lot more disgusting than what they sounded like. It looked like... I don't want to say regurgitated, but it looked like somebody put a cheeseburger in their mouth, chewed, and then spit it out on top of French fries.
I'm picturing like Sloppy Joe on poutine.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. It was wild. So listen, episode three. Now, just to let you know what happened, Brian and I were very lucky in that we saw episode three before you. So we're recording this a couple days early just so we can make sure that we had this flying in your face at warp speed. Because we're still figuring out how we're going to do week to week here on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. It's going to work out. But we saw it, Brian, and we didn't even see it together. You saw it on a Thursday. I saw it on a Friday.
Correct, yes.
And it's funny because I was out in L.A. for episode one and two, the big premiere at the Cinerama Dome, which is one of the most fun and funky theaters in the world, at the Arclight Cinemas in Hollywood. Arclight, excuse me. And it was great to see... To see it there, the shot of Michael Burnham at the beginning going out on the EVA to go to the sarcophagus ship. It looks great. You see the vastness of space and the little dot. And then here in New York, there was a secondary press screening of episodes 1, 2, and 3. And what's funny is that was in a conference room.
Yes.
I don't know what I was expecting. It's like, come see it at CBS Black Rock, which is the big... CBS building.
We actually have our town hall meetings there, so I'm just like,
yeah,
wow, like what bad news am I getting? Oh no, I'm getting something good.
So you've been inside Black Rock before?
Yeah, just for those town halls.
Have you been in that room before?
That's the exact room.
Oh, it's the exact room.
Yeah,
okay, it's not like I've been to other corporate Death Stars, as I like to call them, and I've been to the one that Hearst has. I used to work for Hearst, and Hearst has like a theater that's really nice, and I've seen the one that Time Warner has. And they're like screening rooms / theaters. And this, I mean, I have to think that CBS somewhere else has, because this was just like a room and there was like, it was like being at school. Like they had little desks and chairs.
Yeah, it looked like a high school lunchroom sort of.
Yeah.
There was some fruit and cookies in the back.
There were some really good oatmeal raisin cookies.
Oh, those cookies were actually, I went back for seconds in the cookies.
I had three of those. I had one per episode. So I'd seen one and two again, but I wanted to see it a second time, obviously, as the host of Engage, the special Star Trek podcast. And what's funny, I was having such a science fiction day. I ran from the screening of Blade Runner 2049 to Discovery.
And how was that?
Not to brag too much. You know what? I can't say yet. I liked it. I can tell you that I liked it. I'm not getting into specifics, but I really liked it. And it is a visual feast. It's Roger Deakins, the cinematographer. It looks as good as the original Blade Runner. I mean, and great. Sounds as good. The music is great. It's awesome. So dig. Episode one happens, episode two happens, and then we get to episode three, and that's where we're at. But I guess now's as good a time as any. For yes. those of you who are listening and are maybe still on the fence about CBS All Access, let me tell you that this podcast is has a sponsor, which is CBS All Access, which is like the dumbest sponsor ever because the whole show is an ad for CBS All Access. Well, maybe not. You know, I might be an advocacy for... who knows? I could go rogue and tell you to move to Canada and watch it on the Space Network or something. But no, if you live in these United States, the way to watch Star Trek Discovery is on CBS All Access. And I am an honest man. I will tell you that nobody woke up one morning and said, yes, I would prefer to pay money to watch Star Trek on TV. Nobody wants that. But you understand the business implications. To do sci-fi on television, you need a new way of doing it. It's not the 90s anymore. It's not even the early 2000s with Enterprise. These shows are not going to work on broadcast, and they're going to work on streaming. So dig this. Here's what you get for CBS All Access. Because, Brian,
yes,
I don't know about you, but I just signed up for CBS All Access.
So did I, actually. Funny you mentioned these shows don't work for broadcast.
Yeah.
I don't have cable, so I have a tuner, digital tuner.
Yeah.
And it worked fine for when 60 Minutes was on, and no issues whatsoever.
Yeah.
As soon as Discovery starts, the audio cuts out, the picture gets all pixelated, so I had to sign up that night.
So you're a cord cutter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a cord cutter, too, and it usually works out for me pretty well. But when you get CBS All Access... which is $5.99 with the ads, $9.99 without the ads. When you get it, you get live CBS. So if you're into football, yep. you can watch the football. Or if you're mildly into football and don't want it enough to replace your cord, you get that. You get all the CBS shows that are currently on, the Young Sheldon or whatever the heck they got now. And then all the legacy shows. You got like 900 episodes of I Love Lucy are on there. And all the Star Trek, certainly. And even some movies. I was watching, I just sort of hit play to see it. They had the original Thomas Crown Affair with Steve McQueen.
Wow.
I watched the first 10 minutes, which I'd seen before. But the main gig is the new show. You got to watch a new show on CBS All Access. The first week is free, and then it's $5.99. So I did the math. Forget the free week, because the math for that is too complicated. But let's say you're in the mix. You've already used your free week. Four episodes of Star Trek. At $5.99, it's $1.50 per episode. That's not like
it's
six
not
quarters. Six yeah. quarters for an hour. All right, less than an hour because there's commercials. 52 minutes, six quarters. I feel like that's cool. I feel like I don't. When you look
I'm
at it like that,
that,
it's a way to do it. And you get to take part of this conversation, which is watching Discovery as it happens. Now, there are some people who are real. They got a real bug up their butt about paying. They say they're going to wait and then binge it all. All right, do what you got to do. I like being week to week. This show is about being week to week.
Yeah, it's nice to have something week to week sometimes.
But if you want to, yeah, because everything else is binge.
There's too much pressure to binge things.
Yeah, Stranger Things 2 was like, oh my God, I got to cancel my plans and binge it all.
Yeah, because otherwise it's going to get spoiled.
Yeah, week to week. That's what I like. But if you want to binge it all at the end, you have that option. Wait until December and then get it. You know, do your free week. You can watch it all during the free week and cancel then. You didn't hear me say that. But anyway, that's the deal with All Access. And it's the wave of the future. It's not the wave of the future. It is the future. The future is now.
It's the now.
It's the now. It's not the wave of the now. So Brian and I are paying for All Access out of our own pockets because we love the show. And now we can talk a little bit about Discovery. Now, before we get into episode three, let's just take a look at some of the reviews that, by and large, percentage-wise, most people dug it. Not everybody dug it. There's a couple of critics didn't like it. In fact, a guy that I know didn't like it, Sam Thielman. I've never met him, but I'm friends with him on the internet. He was one of the few negatives, so I'm curious to read why. Kimber Meyer is a close personal friend of mine at the Playlist writes, and I'm using Rotten Tomatoes as a point of her blurb. The show couples pure Star Trek spirit and references that will make fans grin, but has enough action and compelling characters to draw in people who don't know the difference between the Kelvin and Prime timelines. Do you think that's accurate, Brian?
Yeah, no, I was explaining to people today even that you really don't need to know very much. I mean, like, there are definitely some details that add to your enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
But by and large, you can go into this blind and still find it a very enjoyable show.
You kind of can. The only, like, you don't... need to know, and like, it's good to know that Vulcans are logical, but even if you don't know that.
Well, I thought the only thing, the one fact that I said that would be more, that adds to it, was that you know that Sarek is Spock's father. Most
right.
casual fans that have seen maybe just the more recent movies, although yeah. Sarek is in them, they may not remember that. So I think that adds some extra context to
it is
a newbie.
Only just because Spock is like one of the most important pop culture figures
yes, absolutely.
In the world. So like if you know that guy at Spock's, that's like, you know, Charlie Chaplin's Tramp and Spock are like neck and neck. So it's good to know
yeah,
the connection
not,
to Spock.
It's not just some random Vulcan. It's
yeah.
a very important Vulcan.
Right, right. But for the for like plot points, you don't really
you don't
need
really
that
need,
either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what Kimber Myers wrote, and it's funny. I've been wanting to have her on the show for a long time. Other positive notes, people loved Sonequa Martin-Green.
Yes.
Which is great because I think both you and I are not watchers of The Walking Dead.
I was for a long time. I stopped, was it the beginning of 7? I don't remember. I just stopped watching TV.
Was she already part. on
no.
at that point? She
yeah,
came
oh,
later.
Yes,
oh,
yeah,
okay.
yeah. She, yeah. I mean, she's no longer on the show.
Yeah,
but.
Well, good. She's on our show now.
But yeah, no, she was excellent on the show. Absolutely.
Yeah, she's really great. And Doug Jones is awesome as Lieutenant Saru. He's so funny and just interesting and just, you just want to know more
and
about what's
tall.
Going on. He's a tall, thin man.
That was very very apparent to
yeah.
me in this episode.
That's what he really, I mean, we heard when we did our red carpet interviews, he's like, he gets to be, he's like, finally, I'm me. I'm like, no, you're an alien race called a Kelpie. And he's like, no, no, this is what I finally look like. I'm like, okay. So he's pretty great. And Captain Georgiou, I love the dynamic between the three of them, you know?
Yes.
And then, of course, this is a spoiler full zone, she's murdered, killed, stabbed by T'Kuvma, and we see him die. We see her. Saru says we've lost her life signs, but they never beam her body back.
That is true.
Now, I have no insight into this or Michelle Yeoh's contract, but I am saying that we never see her body again. It, you know, this is science fiction.
It's very true.
She could be regenerated. She could have her DNA grafted onto a Klingon.
That would be weird.
Or she could just be dead, you
she
know?
She could be dead. I mean, I'm expecting to see her in further flashbacks anyway.
Right, because she's the is the mother figure.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Amanda, Sarek's wife, but we see Sarek as the father figure. We see her as a mother figure to Michael Burnham. And there's a great flashback scene of when she first comes on the Shenzhou.
Yes.
And Burnham's wearing that awesome red
that was very cool,
cloak
yeah.
or whatever it is. So... yeah, we'll probably see. Well, who knows? We might not see her ever again. We might only see her in flashback. Or I'm just floating this. And again, I have no intel. Maybe she's going to come back because we never got her body back. And maybe they're going to use her DNA.
So the question I have is obviously I'm not as knowledgeable with Star Trek as you. But this is much earlier in the timeline when technology is not as advanced. Anywhere in the future, are you able to transport non-living objects?
Oh,
a dead body. Can you transport a dead body
yes.
anywhere in the future? Have they
yes.
done that?
I wonder. That's a good point. Why didn't they do that? Is because they couldn't read the. I think at that point they were transporting based on biosigns.
Okay.
In later Star Treks, what they do is they transport anything that has a comm badge on it.
That's
so like
point.
There's a you know there's like a weapon or something.
Because
like,
I definitely remember them transporting things other than crew members.
Oh, yeah. Well, in this, they transport the photon torpedo
that's
orb
right. oh, that's true.
Onto
yes.
the dead body. So I guess it can go out. I think, you know, it's funny. In the way it worked, in Saru says, we have lost Captain Georgiou's life signs. Are you okay? And she's like, he's like, yeah. And then Burnham's like, I'm under enemy attack. And he goes, if she is deceased, and she says, I'm not coming back without her body. And then Saru says, she is deceased and you are in peril. I must beam you immediately. Boom. And
yep.
then she goes, ah. By the way, when they go to fight the Klingons, the two of them, first of all, it's awesome.
It was awesome.
That the two of them go over there and kick ass. And they both get assaulted. She gets assaulted by, Georgiou gets assaulted by T'Kuvma, the man who's going to unite the houses. And she gets attacked by Vok, who's going to be his second... It's going to be the new T'Kuvma. And when Vok grabs Michael Burnham, she flips out.
Yes, that was a very loud scream.
She screams and shrieks, and I don't know if it's because he's hurting her or she's having some kind of psychological break because she hates the Klingons.
I was assuming it was a little of both.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that he's a bit stronger as well.
Yeah, so. Probably that too. All right. So, although she's raised in Vulcan, she does not have natural Vulcan strength, which is shown in that she uses the Vulcan nerve pinch, and yes, it doesn't take that long.
Yes.
Like, Spock uses the Vulcan nerve pinch, you're out for like an hour.
Yeah.
She uses it, and Giorgio's out for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, if even.
Yeah. Not the first human to use the nerve pinch. I mean, Picard used one, so it can happen. When I was a little kid, I thought like Vulcans had some kind of magic in their fingertips, you know, that they could do it. But even in TOS, Kirk says at one point to Spock, one day you're going to teach me how to do that, you know. So getting back, though, to that moment when she flips out, it's just a really interesting acting choice, and that they left it in, you know, that because it kind of wakes you up and it's like, hey, this is supposed to be the hero of our show. And she's flipping out right now, you know, but she is a character in movement, in transit. You know, she's not yet the hero because she does some pretty rough things. I mean, she disobeys an order. She is either the most emotional Vulcan or the most logical human. You know, she's neither it's fish nor fowl, you know?
It's a very good analogy.
So, and she is not up to snuff, which is interesting because at the beginning, in the prologue, Georgia was like, you're ready for your own command. And that's not it. That's not true. She's not ready, you know?
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
So that takes us to episode 3. So how awesome is the first shot of episode 3? Her hair's different.
Oh, yes.
She's wearing a prison mustard yellow.
6 months later.
And she's with a bunch of scumbags that are in going to a penal colony.
Yes.
Which, you know, you don't see too much of crime and punishment in the Federation, in the Utopian Federation, but it does exist. There was a penal colony in TOS, and, you know, there are bad guys in the future, even though there aren't that many of them. And she's on that shuttle. And the first thing I jotted down was I needed to do more research about they're calling her the Mutineer, which I love that she's already like a folk anti-hero, you know. Oh, you're the Mutineer, Michael Burnham. And then the shuttle gets attacked by species G554.
Wow, that was
what was it? I wrote it down. I mean, that was the bugs that attacked.
Yeah, the little I would never. I didn't think I even heard them.
Somebody
name them.
They said something like, "Oh, species G554 is all over the boop, 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 you know." So I'm like, "What? I got to write that down," because even nerdier than species 8472 from Voyager. So, but here's the question, right? Everybody listening has seen the whole episode, right? The whole coincidence is the species G554 attacks them in a storm. The shuttlecraft pilot goes out to, I guess, wash the windows of whatever is on there. And then there's a bump, and the shuttlecraft pilot zooms off to a certain death, which is more action than you ever saw in old Star Trek. You know, it's like, holy crap. People on board are freaking out. We're going to die. And then the tractor beam from Discovery. To what extent did this mysterious Captain Lorca, Jason Isaacs' character, set that all up?
I mean, I think this was all very planned.
Do you think it was planned to the point that he wanted to kill a shuttlecraft pilot?
Good question. I mean, I'm definitely sensing some gray overtones with Captain Lorca. Mm-hmm. Would he go so far as to kill a fellow Starfleet officer to get what he wants? I don't know yet.
I think that might have just been an accident.
I think so.
But I also think he doesn't care. Like, all he cared about was getting Burnham to that ship.
Yes.
By any means necessary. And he diverted the ship, somehow sent a storm of those little bugs, which he could certainly do, because he's got, in the last scene, he's got a menagerie of crap in there.
Yes, he does.
He does that snorting beast from the other ship.
Yes.
In the cage now. There's a skeleton of what looked like a Gorn to me. In the last shot, before when he says to his to the head of security, the woman whose name I don't remember right now, and he's like, "Thank you for bringing this to me." And then you cut, and you see it's a snorting beast.
Right? Yes.
Cut back to him, and he's in a menagerie of like stuff, and there's things in cases. And it would be to his left, so the top right of the screen,
okay.
There's a skeleton in a case. And to
like
me, that looked like a Gorn skeleton.
Okay, no, I'm not sure I remember that necessarily.
Which
but.
Would break canon to a degree, because Kirk and everybody else never heard of a Gorn until the episode Arena in original series. That was the first interaction with a Gorn.
Well, it's possible. I mean, it's very clear they're doing some shady stuff.
Black Ops,
right. Off-the-book stuff.
And
so.
That's why this is a brilliant way to write out of so many canon breaches.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if whatever we're going to find out is that Discovery is all on the down low,
yeah,
then they can have anything they want, and just they make sure that the information never leaks. It's like mind-wiping C-3PO at the end of Episode 3.
Yeah.
Which is
scrubbing the records.
You know what? I'm embarrassed. I should not have compared Discovery to the prequels. Let me strike that from the record. I only meant sort of as housekeeping.
Yes.
I always felt that mind wiping. What is it called? Mind wiping? Mind scraping? What are they called?
I don't remember.
Whatever they did to him.
I try to block those movies from
me. I always felt like I kind of knew that was coming. I knew that was coming from Episode 1. I'm like, I gotta do something with C-3PO.
This is not what you would remember, yeah.
And then finally when it comes, I'm like, thank God, everybody can shut up now. So I think the fact that whatever's happening on this ship might be, they've got that ready on the back pocket of how to clean things up. So let's not worry too much about that. But going back a little bit, so after the shuttlecraft, they finally get into the shuttle bay of Discovery, right? And that's when you meet the new character, the chief of security, whose name I don't remember because I'm bad.
Yeah, I could not pick up on her name during the episode. I mean, I know the actress.
Yeah.
I've seen her in tons of things.
I would look it up, but I've got all this in front of me here. But finally, the ship is a little bit brighter. It looks different than the Shenzhou did. You know,
although we know this is the same set.
That's right. But like, as well, like the Shenzhou, I'll be frank. I mean, I love the look of the first two episodes. I certainly love the space battle stuff, and I love the extra vehicular stuff, and I dig the Klingon garb and their look and whatnot. But that ship, like, if I had to spend the whole season on the Shenzhou, it might drive me batty a little bit. It was too dark and maybe a little bit too much like the show Enterprise.
It's Commander Landry.
Landry, right. Yes. And who plays Landry?
Rekha Sharma.
Yeah, she's in a lot of stuff. And I'm glad when they get to that shuttle bay and you first meet Landry, it's like, oh, they have better lighting in here. Or just not, maybe not better, maybe not more cinematic lighting, but I mean like better if you're trying to like
see,
read a memo.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're trying to read a memo in there. And it started to look a little bit more like Star Trek. Although the attitude at that point with Landry, especially, she's tough as nails, reminded me a little bit of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I definitely got some Battlestar vibes from this, especially this episode.
Yeah, because everybody's really tense.
Yes.
Because they're in the middle of the war, and they're not behaving. They are behaving. To me, I interpret it as having only watched it once. There still is the element that was unique to a Star Trek Starfleet officer, that they're there for the purposes of higher calling and good and exploration and whatnot. But they know that they're in the shit, that they're, you know, in the middle of a war and they have to win this thing. And that comes in with Stamets's group, the secret lab that's doing their secret stuff.
Yes.
You could tell they're still good people. I mean, they make jokes, and Stamets is on the video Skype with his buddy on the other ship, and they're human beings. But, you know, the stakes are very, very high. It feels like a war film in a way. And they also, it's not that they don't respect, they don't trust Lorca, but they know that he means business. You know what I mean? Like, I as a viewer, my defenses are up around Lorca because I'm like, when's a shoe going to drop? What terrible thing is he doing? And maybe he's not doing a terrible thing. He just has a very, you know, he's very goal-oriented that we have to win this war.
Yeah, no, he strikes me as you know, the do-whatever-it-takes type, which is why he seeks out Burnham.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of neat. And what does he have on his desk?
What did he have on his desk?
A tribble on his desk.
Did he?
You didn't see that?
No, I didn't notice it.
You didn't hear it?
No, I didn't.
He has a tribble on his desk.
Wow, no, I completely
missed
that.
I guess it's a neutered tribble. I don't know how, but he for sure has a tribble on his desk in his ready room, and he has not reproduced and has not caused havoc. So it is a tribble
yet?
0. Mach 1 or whatever. So, you know, and I guess the fact that he's got a tribble on his desk humanizes him a little bit. You know, he's like a little, you know, cute guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him as being like a flat out evil character. I think he's just going to, you know, have some questionable actions here and there. But I'm not flat out like he's not Lucius Malfoy to me.
No, no. I mean, he's probably going to be like DS9 in the thick of the Dominion War, where they make some really tough calls.
Yeah.
You know, Garak doing what he had to do and Sisko going with it. Episode 3 has kind of the first real joke in the show. I guess there's a couple of jokes with Saru in the first two, but when Cadet Tilly shows up, she's finally, you're like, comic relief, you know?
See, now, I actually felt that some of it felt a little out of place, I guess.
A little too Mary Sue, maybe?
Yeah. Not that it was anything wrong with the actress, Mary Wiseman, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, not that anything wrong with her performance, but the lines and the dialogue felt a little strange with the general tone of the rest of the episode.
Everybody's at war and everybody's panicked about being destroyed anytime, and she's a little bit like, wow, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, like almost
self-conscious.
There was almost like a Valley Girlish line in there somewhere, which is felt really weird. But the little comedic responses from that you got out of Saru sort of in the first two episodes,
yeah,
that felt a lot more appropriate and more in line with everything else going on. But
yeah,
I definitely felt a little out of place with that.
Well, you know, I don't disagree that some of the dig what's happening here. This is really a second pilot. They started the show again because the first episode is a prologue.
Yeah,
first two episodes.
It's almost like it's like a little mini movie first,
yeah,
really, before the show starts.
The first two episodes are one episode, as far as I'm concerned, and it's all a prologue. And everybody you meet gets killed except for two people.
Yeah,
and then in episode 3, you don't see the Klingons again. All that flock, flock, flock is gone. All that subtitle reading. And then you got to meet a whole new cast.
Yeah.
You got to meet Lorca.
Stamets.
Stamets. And then you got to meet her roommate, who was supposed to be comic relief. And some of the dialogue is, I don't want to say awkward dialogue. I want to say, like, we got to get our work. We got to get it done. You know,
yeah,
it's very hard to do pilots. I mean, all show pilots are problematic, and this Star Trek pilots have. I mean, Caretaker from Voyager, I thought was probably the best. But you know, you watch the TNG pilot, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
And they, in a way, Discovery really made it harder on themselves by having to do a double. I mean, the show is so different, Episode 3 from the
Absolutely.
Previous two. So it's like starting over again. So I know what you mean. Like some of the humor there is, it's like, yeah, they're kind of like first day at school, and she's, you know, Tilly is very chit chatty, and then it would be like it would make sense if she worked maybe in the cafeteria, but she's in the thick.
Yeah.
Of,
no, I mean,
you know, she's in Stamets' group, so she knows how high the stakes are. It's a little
yeah.
bit funny that she's.
I almost
so...
didn't mind that she worked there. I mean,
no, it was
that,
great
that,
to see her.
That it's,
yeah.
a, that it's a weird, kind of like a quirky character, and that it's a very highly skilled person as well. I don't mind
yeah.
that at all, but it's like I think some of the comedy felt a little out of place in her lines. That was.
Yeah.
But I mean, hey, maybe it'll grow on me. I mean, for a second, I questioned, like, this felt more appropriate for the Orville. Which I'm also enjoying.
Yeah, the Orville rules. I haven't seen episode 4 of the Orville yet, but
I don't even know what night it's on, so I've only seen the first 3.
Yeah, it's who knows? Television right now is very complicated. But you know, I thought it was funny, and then she's a chronic snorer, and she's like it's like I certainly see her being a fan favorite,
yeah.
Tilly. And I, you know, I thought, and she's, you know, young, cute, and just like, and the actress who plays her is very very nice when I met her for 30 seconds. I could see that, like, I'm going to enjoy getting to know her.
I think so.
Very
as well.
Likable
yes.
character.
I think so.
you know, in a Neelix kind of way, in a Quark kind of way. I mean, somebody's got to be that role. But I think that we're going to discover the fact that she was not just the goofy roommate, but in Stamets's group. And then when they go to the other ship, she's there too. And she does have that moment where she toughens up. She's like,
yes.
Show yourself! You know, it's like, oh, all right. She's got some sand on her, yeah. You know? So I think it's going to be an interesting character. But then they go to sleep. And we've had red alerts. We've had yellow alerts. On Voyager, we even had a blue alert. I remember the first when seeing Star Trek 3 in the theaters and there was a yellow alert. I'm like, what's the yellow alert? I was like, oh, that's the alert where they just stand, you know, in that sort of like space and watch. They're like in a cafeteria or something and they watch the ship slowly try to escape on a yellow alert. Now we have a black alert.
Yes.
Black alert. And the black alert is, I don't exactly know why that's different from a... It's an alert for a black ops, for yes. an ops that you don't talk about.
It means weird stuff's going to happen and you're not, you know, be prepared for it.
So the black alert was that they're using whatever kind of, I'm a little mixed up on this myself, which is why I'm looking forward to watching it again. They've figured out some sort of post-warp transportive element within this foundational... molecules of space-time.
Yes.
And they're able to somehow exploit it to go fast or to transport into other places.
Almost instantaneously.
Right. By using the veins of the fabric of reality itself, which is wild. I don't quite know what they mean by it, and I don't know what implications it has for later Star Trek, because it's setting up some, like, well, how come we never saw this again? But... using it is dangerous because it'll make mercury bubbles float around your living quarters.
Yes.
And then when it happens, you're supposed to roll over and go to sleep.
Yeah. So stuff's going on. I guess you could stay asleep and ignore it.
Right. And she's like, what's going on? You weren't briefed? No. Then I can't say anything. And she goes to bed. And yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on. But it's cool. Like I laughed out loud. At that.
That was good, yeah.
Even though I'm like, what the hell is this? And this does not seem like standard Starfleet protocol, but this is Discovery. That's even a line, right?
I think somebody is, says yeah.
this is Discovery. So you have black alerts and then the ship gets dark and you go to bed. You just put a
blanket over your head.
It's kind of like Hitchhiker's Guide. You throw a towel over your head.
You put your non-allergenic pillow under your head.
Yeah. I'm going to do that like in life. When things are bumming me out, I'm going to be like, black alert, and just go to bed. I don't know. I hope we learn more. I hope we see more black alerts, and I hope we know what measures they're taking by just ignore the flubber. Ignore the flubber. You know what else was kind of cool? I mean, so the look of the ship, I like it. Now, you know, I've been poking around online, and there are some fans that just can't get over the fact that this is supposed to be before TOS, but it looks so modern.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that is true. You know, that's life. Somebody else pointed out that, you know, the movies, the recent three films, got away with that because they would say, well, the destruction of the Kelvins reset the timeline. So that means that you can't whine about this. And okay, but the prologue of that film is before the time that Kelvin gets destroyed, and that ship looked more modern too. The Kelvin ship itself
yes.
looked more modern than anything else in either Enterprise or TOS.
Say,
so you got to.
This is an unwinnable battle. It looks too fancy or it doesn't look fancy. And if it looked exactly like it did in TOS, then it's why does it still look like that?
Right.
It's been 50 years.
It would look like one of those dopey fan films.
Yeah.
So it's an unwinnable battle. Exactly. But one thing that I thought was nice was there are, and I suspect there are going to be more of these. There are little hat tips to the original design. And one of them was when Burnham goes to work that day. She's a temp. They even call her like a temp.
Me too.
She goes to work for the day, which is like, you know, like that's not like they're there to test her out, you know, yeah. But she goes to work for the day and she's handed a data chip and it kind of looks like the old yellow squares from the original series, but it's a sleeker. It's a little translucent. You can just tell it's a different material, but it's clearly meant as a, remember those data chips that
it's a nod.
Chekhov would hand to Sulu when he clunk in the machine. It's like, that's what it's supposed to be. And I thought that was a really nice way of updating the older style.
Yeah, that's something that I think people just have to let go of. I mean,
yeah.
We want it to look better. I mean, we do.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, whether and you know it or not, you want
it to. It's a nice callback, but we definitely want it to look better now.
So I would like to see more of those callbacks, but modernized. And I think you will see that. Like, there are some, when on the Shenzhou, like, some of the buttons looked like, you know, it wasn't all like touch screens.
Yes, there were some buttons. There were some levers and raised buttons, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. When they do some beaming, it's a touch screen, but it mirrored sort of what
it's almost like this slider on my little audio board here.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was pretty cool. The other thing that really was weird was the breath scan.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen that in any spy movie ever.
No, I don't think that was definitely new to me.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, but I thought it was neat. Yeah, I mean,
and she solved the issue getting around that in an interesting
with
way.
With drool.
Yeah.
With drool. You know, Star Trek Beyond, they melt the door with Kienzer's
spit.
Acid snot.
Oh, snot, that's right.
Yeah, it was not spit, it was snot.
It was snot, you're right.
And with this, they use, because she's a snorer, they've established that she snores. So she's drooling. Poor Mary Wiseman, because she's a beautiful young woman and a great role for her. And she's a snoring, drooling slob in this show.
So,
but she puts herself together nicely.
Did Michael switch the pillows unknowingly to get her to snore?
Oh,
that was a question I had. I mean, I kind of got that impression. I mean, she clearly can think her way out of a situation. I mean, the brig scene in the previous episode, which was great.
Yeah, she's a smart. She was raised in Vulcan Learning Center.
I felt like there's what other reason for them to throw that out there is she didn't actually switch it, but not that they show her.
Well, that's one for the. That's the next time we get Sonequa on the show. You know, we only had her briefly, but when we get her in here, we'll ask. That is a good question. I would like to say yes.
Yeah.
She switched the pillows and then got her to drool and then was able to then she uses like the hypo spray to puff out a little air into the. It was so funny. kind of silly, but really
funny. But in
funny.
A good way. I liked it.
Yeah. And then what did I write down here with the breath scan? Then they mentioned the Geneva Conventions of 1928 and 2155, which is a classic Star Trek. You know, mention something we know from our history.
Yes.
And then something from the future. And my other note, I love the line. I didn't know it was the episode of the title of the episode is called Context
for Kings. Yeah.
And I didn't know that. And when they said that line, I jotted it down. I'm like, that's a good line.
It was a good line.
I'm like, oh, I wasn't the only one who thought that. They named the name of the episode.
I didn't know that the name of the episode going into it either.
Yeah.
So.
And then Saru put salt in his tea.
Oh, I didn't notice
when
that.
When he's drinking his tea, unless the sugar is in a very long, thin cylinder.
Huh.
But it looked like a salt shaker to me. So,
interesting.
And then the other thing we need to think about is the first not explicit mention, but the closest we've come to an explicit mention of Spock when she says that Amanda used to read Alice in Wonderland to my stepbrother and I. Did she say stepbrother or? I forget. It was a couple days ago.
She did mention him. She did call him something, but I don't remember exactly what
it
was.
My brother, stepbrother, half-brother,
something.
She mentioned a fella that, though. I mean, if you're totally new to Star Trek, you don't know who, but most people would know that's Spock. So that's the first mention of Spock. So now we know. We can go back and look at every episode of Star Trek and know that within him is the knowledge of Alice in Wonderland, that he had that read to him as a child. It's nice to think of Spock being read to as a child. You know, that is different, you know? And then, you know, so she proves herself on the away mission, gets the approval of not just Lorca, but also like Stamets.
Who was a little standoffish at first, I'd say.
Yeah, well, Stamets is an interesting character because he is a scientist and an explorer. He reminds me a little bit of from Wrath of Khan. Kirk's wife, the mother of David.
Why am I blanking on the name too?
I could tell you her name in real life, but you know, the founder of the Genesis Project.
Yeah.
That's so embarrassing.
I'm going to cut this part
Marcus,
out.
Carol Marcus.
Carol Marcus. Yes.
You can leave it in. Long day. Brian's been a long day. I was up late. I was up early. I did another podcast before this. Came here. Haven't had lunch. Not complaining. Having a great time. Having a great time having Star Trek Discovery on.
Yeah.
I mean, after all this time. And, you know, getting good responses on the internet from fans who listen to the show and just fans in general. Here's the thing. Negative people on the internet. Most of the people who are negative about Discovery are not negative about the show so far. After two episodes, we're recording this before episode 3 goes on the air.
Yes.
We're on the stream. Maybe people will hate it. I don't know. But after the first two, not going to misrepresent and say there isn't negativity. I would say 75% of that negativity has nothing to do with the content of the show. It has to do with the distribution model.
Yes.
A lot of people were unaware about All Access. I don't know how you could have been. It's been promoted for a really long time, but a lot of people were just shocked.
Yeah, at least a year and a half of that this podcast has been on.
You know, because they're advertised. You know, they watch football and they saw the ads, and then yep. It was after 60 minutes, and they watched the first one. They're like, "What? I gotta do a stream?" And I even on my own Twitter account said, "Listen, folks, if you use a Roku as I do, do it now at noon if you happen to be home. You know, drinking coffee." Get on All Access now because you know, like later, it's never quite as
quick
as you want it to be. And also,
happened to me,
whenever it's new, whenever there's a push, you know, there might have been, if everybody did it at once, I would imagine that stalled or, you know, taken a moment, which I remember from HBO Go when HBO Go first became a big enough deal and it was the first time. That a Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
There was a big crunch, and everybody tried to get on HBO Go for the first time, for like season 3 finale or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a social media disaster for HBO. So I said, guys, get on. You know, might as well do it now. Get on All Access now. And people who you know are into are enough tuned in to follow me on Twitter and know how to tweet and. Know enough about life. We're like, oh, I thought it was on regular CBS tonight. I'm like, no. It's the first episode and then the second one, and you got to do it now. And like people, and other people are like, what? It's not on broadcast. I'm like, oh God. I mean, no. Then I had to do my whole spiel again at 6/4 an episode and blah blah blah.
It is a little unconventional.
Oh yeah,
I don't think this has been done before. I mean, necessarily.
No.
So it's new, but. But still, it's been out there.
Right. So why did I even bring that up? I brought that up because, so most of the complaints were due to the, I'm not paying for this.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know what, I hereby declare on episode 60 whatever of Engage the Official Star Trek Podcast.
66?
On episode 66 and on the recap episode of episode 3 of Discovery, I hereby declare that argument is now null and void.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing we can do short of moving to Europe or Canada.
Yeah.
Which is nice, by the way. And it's pointless. And I neither agree nor disagree with people who are upset about that. I don't want to pay $1.50 an episode either, honestly. But also, I'll do it and it's great.
It's the best $1.50 I'll spend. At this point, with 3 episodes in, it's absolutely worth it to me.
Yeah,
it's
so,
totally worth
it. But I'm done with trying to convince people to do it. I don't care. So those arguments are null and void. The other negative responses, like I haven't really seen some of the other negative responses where people hung up about like why are there holograms?
Yeah,
you know, for 50 years of Trek. When you wanted to talk to another ship, a view screen was good enough for me. Why are there holograms? Like, because holograms look cool, dude.
They do.
You know, so shut up. And like, and why do the Klingons look different? Like, they do. Because they do. Shut up and watch the show.
The Klingons look great.
Garflock, blah,
blah. I thought they sounded great. I was way more engrossed than I would think about that, you know?
Yeah, sympathy for Takuvma, man. He has been misunderstood. He just loved Kayla so much. And his gal pal, Mary Chifo's Laurel, I'm waiting for more of her. Vok, whose eye was bloody at the end of episode two.
It was.
And Call, we're going to see. I think Call is going to be important. He only showed up as a hologram so far. And that's the
vote. He was the first guy that.
It's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
He's like, okay. Screw you guys. I am out. And then Vok, son of Nun. I am Vok, son of Nun. What's cooler, son of Nun or a king in the north?
Oh, that's a tough question for me. Come on. They were both very cool. I mean.
I am Vok, son of Nun. I don't know how to say it in Klingon. I got to get one of my Klingon interpreters on here. Hopefully, see episode four, we get a little bit of, we get some of our boys back. We get Vok.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you of how many of those Klingons that we have seen, I mean, or which ones will be prominent moving forward. I mean, obviously, I think the one that that said no.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Vok, Laurel.
And Vok and, obviously has to come back.
Because, yeah, he's now the guy.
Yeah.
He's the torchbearer now.
Yeah.
Or the leader of the Uniters, the would-be. He's the heir apparent to Kuvma's plan.
Yes.
And he's the, you know, he believes in Kalis and I be Klingon and be only Klingon. And Laurel, I will be important too. I don't want her to be just like behind every man, there's a good woman. I want her to have her own arc, her own agency, as they say. And then we're going to see that dude, Call, as the antagonist within the, and maybe Call is going to team up with Lorca or something.
Wow, that would be interesting.
Because he doesn't want to unite, and he's going to be, maybe, I don't know, I'm just spitballing. These are, we're almost at the point now where we can start having crazy fan theories. I think we need one more episode.
Yeah, maybe a little more, because we've only had one of the actual discovery.
The show hasn't actually started yet. This friggin' show, man. It's delayed a year, and now it's episode three, and like it's still building, but it's all cool. It's all cool. But like, I feel like now we finally are in. You know, that other ship got killed. How brutal was that death of Stamets's buddy? I forget his name. On the other ship,
oh, yeah,
he's all mangled.
Ship. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that at all.
That was
all
gross.
Those bodies were really mangled.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the beast on the ship is cool, whatever
yes,
it is.
It was very cool.
And then she goes full James Cameron aliens and goes up into the Jeffrey's tube to escape. And you know,
she's reciting the Alice in Wonderland.
Right. It was a little corny, but all right.
A little bit. Yeah, but it worked for me.
Yeah.
It came together when she handed the book to...
Got
to
do something other than just shout.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do something. So, and you know, so that is an example of an actor getting a tough thing to do and nailing it.
Yes.
Like a lesser performer could not have done the recitation of Alice in Wonderland while running away from a giant computer-generated beast.
Crawling away.
Crawling from a computer-generated beast. She sold it because Sonequa is great. And I'm telling you, she's going to be a huge star. You know, when she's able to fit in feature films while shooting this and when this is done or whatever, you know, she's major.
So my next question involving that beast is that clearly everyone on this ship that was present when this accident happened was horribly mangled. Why is that beast still walking around alive and breathing?
There are a lot of questions that haven't been answered. We don't even know what caught...
Oh, what it is.
I think... And why it was there. There's three things that happened on that ship. And I'm embarrassed to say I didn't write down the name of the ship. And it's, you know, they're so nuts with spoilers on for CBS right now.
I was going to think I could look it
Google
up,
it.
But there's no way I can Google
we
it.
We can't Google it. We can next in a couple, by the time this airs, we can Google it.
Yeah.
But it's, let's call it the USS, the USS Brian.
Yeah, there we go. Great
so
name.
So they go on the USS Brian and you've got the fabric of space-time that they are monkeying with to create instant warp travel has somehow caused an effect that made these people turn into a stretched out Charleston Chew.
Yeah.
And Stamets's buddy is now a stretched out Charleston Chew. And by the way, Anthony Rapp, great, you know, he only has a second. He's a pro. He's on an away mission. Does not let emotion get the better of him. But he's like, holy crap, that's my good friend.
Well, I mean, you know, I think they were applying more than that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. I mean, I know where you're going with that because, you know, it's been in the press that Anthony Rapp's character is going to be gay and out.
I mean, I very clearly felt that that was his partner.
Okay. The only reason why I say no is because I just know from what I'm told that his partner on the show, I don't know that this is a spoiler, and if it is, too bad. I'm saying it anyway. The character that's supposed to play his partner, in his life partner, is either the chief medical officer or a medical officer on Discovery.
Okay.
So he's elsewhere on
Okay, fair enough.
So I think, I mean, it's all implication right now, but I think that guy was just his buddy.
It was
And they were working on the project together.
On the other ship, there was a point where, maybe it wasn't on the other ship, but when Stamets was explaining, you know, why he doesn't like Burnham.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, oh, we used to be on the same ship. Me and my friend here, we were on the same ship together.
Oh, maybe. Well, I
kind of got that implication.
You know what? I don't disagree with you, but I only because I know that his partner is the medical officer. But maybe they're going to fall in love next week. I don't know.
Maybe.
But I think it was just that they were, you know, science bros together and they were working on this thing. And that's the other thing. And this is a big arc that we haven't really talked about because it's still it's still being worked out. Everybody in the world, everybody on the ship and in the future blames the mutineer for this war.
Yes.
And that's a little bit unfair because I think what the truth of the matter is, I think that the Klingons would have fired upon the Federation ships anyway, regardless of Burnham raising shields.
Well, is she the mutineer because of the insubordination with Captain Georgiou, or is she the mutineer because, I mean, if you remember their plan, they said let's take Takovma captive to show him as a weak person, but she actually shoots him almost potentially out of anger for stabbing Captain Georgiou.
I think she goofed.
So,
yeah.
So which aspect is she the mutineer for causing the war?
All right, this is great, and it's funny that we're talking about this now because we should have led with this.
Yes.
But anyway, but that's okay. That's okay. So there's like four things happening here. Number one, she did commit an unpardonable act of insubordination.
Yes.
She used the Vulcan pinch on her captain. Spock was insubordinate to Kirk a few times, but never to that level. But she really went over the top on that one, and that is bad.
Yes.
And, you know, Worf committed acts of insubordination and lost a stripe. And, you know, he will never be a captain in the books and whatever because of what he did. Because he went back for Jadzia when they were on some planet or whatnot. So, like, there are ramifications for acts of insubordination. So she did that. And then I think people unknowingly blame her for the death of Georgiou. And I think probably Burnham blames herself.
Yeah,
also.
Absolutely she does, yes.
And I don't know necessarily that it was her fault. I think they were in a fight and just Burnham was overpowered by Takovma and got killed. That's
all
there was to it.
I mean, the next question I was going to ask was that, you know, had Burnham got the shot off before Georgiou got up, how would this have changed?
And killed Takovma?
Well, no.
Let's say they brought Takovma back as planned.
No. Not that part. When she's first trying to fire the shot from the Shenzhou, Captain Georgiou stops.
It still would have been bad. It still would have been bad because Starfleet doesn't fire first. But Georgiou would not have been killed, and all those other ships wouldn't have been destroyed either.
Yeah, but maybe those other ships wouldn't have come. It was pretty close afterwards. Or maybe they would have seen it that this ship's already destroyed. Okay, maybe I'm going to just peace out.
Right. It's a good question. I think that if she got the shot off beforehand, certainly the Federation would have had the upper hand. The Europa would not have been destroyed.
Yes.
Commander so-and-so, Admiral so-and-so who got killed would not have been killed. So it would have been a better day. Now, the other
Admiral
thing, which is...
Anderson?
Admiral White Guy, whatever his name was. But here's a very key point, which I was talking about with someone who was very involved with the show. At the end of episode 2, when she gets condemned by that council of three people who were in shadow, and they say, you will be stripped of rank and sent to a penal colony for life, she never defends herself.
Yeah, she flat out says, I'm guilty. Yeah,
she says, I'm guilty, and... there was no one else to see it. No one else saw what happened on that ship, and no one else is going to speak up for her because of what happened on the bridge. because, you know, they were all loyal to Giorgio and they blame her for Giorgio's death.
Yes.
But the truth of the matter is, she certainly was insubordinate, but she was right.
She was right.
She was her instincts were 100% correct. Her methods were not correct, but her instincts were correct. And she just, you know, they weren't able to cross the finish line when they did the away mission to the other ship. I think if more, and now we cut to 6 months later for episode 3, and they're like, oh my God, that's the mutineer. They all blame her for the war. And of course, Everybody in Starfleet has a friend who was killed in the war by now or something like that. So they all just hate her. And the truth of the matter is, she's not as bad as they all think. However, Burnham has internalized this. And she
agrees with them.
She agrees with them. She puts up no fight. She does not defend herself because she hates herself as much as they hate her. And she's being a little bit unfair to herself, I think. I think that if she had a better lawyer, but not just that. Or just stood up for herself, or if there was a way to let people know, here's what actually went down, they would not be making her the scapegoat for the entire war.
But,
and I think that this is going to become more evident in later episodes.
There must have been debriefings of some kind. She must have actually said, hey, this is how it went down. Record of it.
Maybe not. Giorgio was her mother figure. She loved her for 7 years. She was working under her. She's devastated because she feels that she killed Giorgio because she started the situation and was unable to protect her on the other ship. So she might have just as soon as Giorgio died and she screams on the transporter deck, she might have just been like a mute throughout the whole process. Maybe.
Good
we
point.
Don't know.
Good point.
We don't know. So I think that this is going to come out as part of Burnham's whole redemption arc. I mean, hopefully by the end of season one, Lorca and the gang and Stamets and Tilly and everybody are going to realize that Burnham is the best. I mean, even Saru says she's the best officer I've ever seen, except for that one time she took over the ship, right? So there's... Aside for her insubordination.
She's the best.
She's the best. So, hey, listen, everybody makes one mistake.
Yeah.
My God, you know? It makes her very human. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking forward to for what's coming up in for episode 4. And I don't know. What do you want to see in the next episode?
Well, there's a couple of other things I wanted to ask about, too. So obviously, we've established that there's some shady dealings on the Discovery.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to how Saru is stationed on this.
Right, because he seems like an honorable man.
He seems
right?
like really on the up and up. And I'm very confused as to, I mean, we really didn't even see much interaction between Lorca and Saru, which I'm curious to see moving forward.
That's a good point. And how
he gets around his kind of, I don't want to say by the book, but I mean, he definitely seems like he's on the right side.
I think the answer is they're like, we're at war and we gotta win this thing. But you're absolutely right, because Saru does seem like somebody who wouldn't be part of sort of black ops stuff.
Yes.
You know, maybe we're being too negative about Discovery. Maybe it's not as, you know, we're so conditioned to mistrust the government.
Okay, but
maybe
there was a scene where he's in a room and he walks up and it's all shadows everywhere. He walks up to the wall and then you see the giant creature there.
Right.
They did not show. So, I mean, that's questionable. That does not seem like something that would happen in Starfleet. I mean,
no, to steal that thing. Oh yeah. So by the way,
they blew up the ship.
Well, they did that though because it had all the data of the new stuff.
But
we got to call this a thing. The drive.
Have we ever seen that before? Has another Starfleet ship ever blown up another ship because it was?
To keep it out of falling in the hands of the enemy? That is a very good question, and I think the answer is no.
So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, they were covering the tracks.
Yes.
They were covering the tracks. That's if it happened earlier, I'm forgetting. It would have been, that's some deep Dominion War activity.
But I mean, to me, it was like, you know, also, they are doing shady things, and we need to make sure that nobody knows this is going on.
Right, right. No, it totally
there is no
makes
record
sense.
Of this. As you know, our escape for continuity breaches.
They're having burn bags at the CIA. So, it's interesting, and you're right. Saru seems like what would Spock do, right? Because Saru is sort of like a Spock character.
That is very true. I do see that.
What would he do? I don't know. We're going to find out. I mean, there's more to come, and it's a good question.
And then, lastly, I'm very curious to see how Burnham fits into this crew, like what her position is. I mean, is she under Saru now? Is she equal? Does she even have a rank?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably.
And how will Saru react to her being part of this mission?
I think they're going to recognize that she's a clutch player, and they need her for her strength and her quick wit. And you know, she was able to escape that beast by she figured out a way to save them all.
Yes,
she saved everybody on that away team,
and all the information they were able to take from that ship.
Right, and nobody knows Klingons like her.
Yeah,
so Lorca is going to protect her, and I keep forgetting her name. The woman who is the chief of security.
Oh, I lost her already too.
Yeah,
Landry,
whatever. Landry's going to protect her, even though Landry hates her because you're the one who started this war. Blah.
Yeah.
So they're going to recognize her, but maybe they'll double cross her. Maybe what'll happen is they'll use her up for all of her Klingon knowledge, throw her away, and then it's going to be Stamets and Saru that stand up for her. We don't know. There's so much to think about.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's about it for this week. Let me know your theories out there in podcast land. You can always go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/engagetheofficialstartrekpodcast. facebook.com/engagetheofficialstartrekpodcast. You can tweet at me at Jay Hoffman. At Jay Hoffman is how you can tweet at me. You can't tweet at Brian because Brian don't tweet. Machete don't text. Charlie don't surf. And Brian don't tweet. But you can tweet at him through me and I'll get the message to him. You know, I do get messages about you, Brian.
Really? I hope they're not too awful.
No, it's you know, I get on Facebook sometimes, not on the wall, but directly into my inbox on Facebook. I get, you know, oh, I enjoyed episode 55 or oh, episode 54 sucked or, you know, whatever it is. And then a lot of times it's you and Brian are so great. It's not just you.
Great.
I love hearing you and Brian talk to the guest. And I don't want to hog the spotlight here. This is, you know.
Well, thank you out there.
Yeah. Well, there's the one guy who does it.
You know? Thank you, that one guy.
Cool. All right. So next week we're going to have episode 4 recap. Do we know the name? That's the one with the real florid name.
Oh, yeah. I have it up here. The next episode is The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
Who do you think's going to say that? Because now that we know these titles
Lorca.
Are coming from...
Absolutely Lorca.
The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
Yeah, absolutely him.
That's not a Klingon line? Vlach, blocher, blach, all right. Cares, vlach.
You're right. No, I'm actually very... Another thing, I'm very curious to see how they incorporate the Klingons on a weekly basis.
Yeah, are we just going to see them on that ship? Or are they going to get the heck off of that ship once in a while? I want to see them at home it would watching
be very,
TV.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how they...
Making dinner.
They do that.
Maybe making dinner, and that's why they talk about the Butcher.
There you go.
It's the second longest title in Star Trek.
Which is the longest?
Is Season 3 TOS, For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky.
Ah.
Which is a beautiful title. And a pretty medium plus episode. It's a Bones centric episode, so you'd think I would love it, and I merely like it. Uh-huh. I've always wanted to like that episode more. But you know, the prop from The World is Hollow, the green thing, it's like a big computer. It's the green thing from that episode, is up in Ticonderoga, like the actual one. It's pretty great. It's like the thing they all pray to, and it's a computer thingamajig. I don't know. All right, cool. Well, listen, that's the show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends to listen. I hope you're all enjoying Star Trek. We're in the thick of it now. Episode 3 is done. I hope you liked it. If you were on the fence about 1 and 2, hopefully 3 swung in a way that you liked more. I think so. It starts to feel a little bit more like TV Star Trek in episode 3.
I think so too. I think this is, it sets the tone a little more.
Episode 1 and 2 felt like movie Star Trek.
Yeah, it did.
And
it was still fantastic. Yeah. I've loved every second of this so far.
No, I love the Star Trek movies, but it felt like movie Star Trek. I mean, some of it is just the budget. I mean, there's a lot of money in 1 and 2.
And those are some fantastic space battles.
They were great. The shots of Burnham getting from the brig to the other side of the ship, going through the cube. That very Tron-looking brig.
That might be my favorite scene that's happened so far, I think, actually. That whole exchange with the computer.
Well, it's very Kirk.
It is.
That's the most original series we've seen, is her talking to that computer and then jumping through. And I'm going to try to keep my eyes open more in episode 4 for more sort of little connections to old Star Trek. You know, either visually like the data chip or that scene, because I bet you there's going to be one
there
per episode.
Will be.
All right, guys. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.